Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of the Breakfast with the Gators show. Welcome. We got Tate Casey on the show tonight, two-time SEC champion, two-time national champion. Welcome, Tate, to the show.
I appreciate you having me, guys.
Yeah, real quick, we are a part of the Stadium McGill Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Well, Tate, this is a big one for you. Growing up, I believe, just outside Dallas, take us through growing up in Texas, and you got the Longhorns coming to the Swamp for the first time, I think, since 1940.
Yeah, it's been a while, and you know, coming from West Texas to East Texas, you know, I grew up in Odessa and I went to high school in Longview, which is a transition in itself. But you know, grew up a Red Raider out in West Texas, and then went to high school and got recruited by UT, and Mac Brown kind of, I don't know if I'd say did me dirty, but didn't necessarily hold true to the word of keeping that scholarship intact till signing day. So, you know, I had other plans and started looking around. I ended up in Florida. So it's fun to think about this game. It's a long time coming. I always thought it'd be one of those games we'd get to play, you know, back in 05, 06, 07, or 08. So instead we got OU, but it's nice to finally get a draw against a Texas team that we hadn't played since I've been here, so.
Yeah, and speaking about that a little bit, what was that decision like coming from Texas to Florida? You said Mac Brown kind of did you a little bit dirty. What was the message from Ron Zook that eventually made you go from East Texas to North Central Florida?
Well, I think one, two-sport athlete had a lot to do with it, right? Baseball was in the cards for pretty much every school that I was talking to. And, you know, if Augie Garrido would have had it his way, I would have been playing baseball on scholarship at Texas instead of discussing, you know, football. I think Augie probably didn't like the fact that Mac wanted control over what I did and where. So I think, you know, Zook sold it well. You know, Dwayne Dixon had a lot to do with that. Larry Fedora had a lot to do with that. And I got to give a shout out because Ben Troop had a lot to do with that. You know, being the fact that Troop was leaving, how they used the tight end in that offense was a lot to do with why I came to Florida. And having 84 available was the other, you know, cherry on top. So I think I told Zook in my Friday night recruiting visit, it was the last one I took, and I kind of went into it thinking that Florida was everything I thought it was going to be. You know, I'm going to go ahead and just seal the deal, commit, and be done with it. And it was kind of nice because I had a lot of guys that I ended up going to school with at UF that were there that same weekend, with Javier Estepina and, you know, Phil Trotwine, Drew Miller, Jim Tart. A lot of the guys that I met on my recruiting trip ended up coming to UF and being a part of those championship teams. So I think I told Zook, I said, if I can lock down number 84, I'm here. And so that was kind of knowing I was going to do it anyway, just trying to sweeten the deal just a tad, was a great mark of that. And, you know, became a Gator that Friday night, never looked back.
Well, we're glad you made that decision as you helped lead us to two SEC titles and two national championships. This game, with you being from Texas, it was circled probably on your calendar, you know, ever since this game. You know, we were in Austin last year, but with that return date to Gainesville, this was a matchup coming in the offseason, you know, potential two top 10 teams, Lagway versus Manning. And we thought this was going to be like the generational quarterback showdown. And really neither the quarterbacks have lived up to those expectations. And, you know, Florida 1-3 coming into Saturday's game. What kind of environment are you expecting Saturday in Gainesville?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those games that it'd be real easy for people to just write Florida off. I think when you look at it from a different perspective, I've always told people so far, if the defense was playing bad and the offense was playing lights out, it'd be a very tough task and an uphill climb the rest of the way. You know, to me, the fact that you've got a defense that's going out there and grinding out, you know, games and the offense just hasn't come along just yet gives me a little bit of hope. Because I think if you swap that around, it's just a tougher task. You know, and we've seen it. I mean, the last 15, 20 years, since I've been around, we've seen really good offense and terrible defense. You know, Cardozo and I talk about all the time in the pregame. it's been since 2019 since we've seen a top 50 defense at Florida. And that's not the way it is. I mean, Florida's supposed to be those top 10, top 15 defenses every year, year in, year out. And we hadn't seen that. And we had good offense at times, but it's hard to win games in the SEC with just good offense, you know. And I think if you flip that, if you play championship caliber defense, your offense, it takes a lot of stress off them, takes a lot of pressure to win ball games. So looking forward to DJ to, you know, kind of turn the corner. I think Florida, from a fan base perspective this weekend, man, I would love to see the Swamp rocking, because I think we're at our best. And at least when we've got a defense that's going out playing the way we are, fans have a lot to do with that. Creates the environment. I think for me, that's what it is. I think you've got a great chance to win this game if the offense turns the corner.
Yeah, we always joke the Swamp will get you one, you know, each year. And I think we've won three straight top 25 matchups, or three straight top 25 teams that come to the Swamp have lost. So maybe we can spur a little bit more magic come Saturday at 3:30.
Well, and I think you just got to make good decisions, right? I mean, like, when you look at the last three games, really, defense has played lights out. And you've asked them to do a lot, right? I mean, we've put them on the short field multiple times. You saw that in LSU. We saw that battlefield position in Miami. You know, we punted a ton in the second half, couldn't get the ball moving and move the sticks. And I mean, listen, guys, football didn't change that often, right? I mean, the philosophy is still the same. You've got to find ways to move the chains. You got to win on early downs, and you can't shoot yourself in the foot with mistakes and penalties and turnovers. So, you know, I think Florida's, you know, had a tough time with that in the last three games. And so you hope that that's the emphasis this week. Going into a home game and being back in the Swamp.
Yeah, Will, I'll turn it over to you with the questions you have for Tate.
Yeah. Tate, well, thanks for joining the show. Been a big fan. I've been growing up in Gainesville and then going to basically every single Florida football game forever. I think I was 10 when you caught the jump pass, and that was like the highlight of every kid's career. Tebow gets way too much credit for that, though. By the way, you had to make this incredible falling catch that people don't really talk about nearly enough.
I tell people it's the most athletic catch I've ever made. You don't realize how long that ball holds up in the air like that in a crowd of 92,000. It takes about 3 hours to come down, so yeah. I appreciate that.
And another thing that, you know, thinking about that 2006 LSU game, I think they came in number one in the country. If not, they were definitely top three or top five. But Florida had to have a lot go its way outside of just the jump pass. I remember Jamarcus Russell, I think he was that the game he fumbled on like the 1 yard line when they could have had a touchdown. We ended up turning that into points, obviously taking points off the board from them. And so do you think that in order for Florida to keep this game close and to even win the game, there's going to be things like that just have to go Florida's way?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past saying yes, but there's also times where I've said that and we've come out and done what we need to on offense and, you know, it's a non-issue. I think if I was considering the last four games, I would say in order for Florida to win this game, they're going to have some turnovers that are, you know, impact plays or special teams plays from Vernell Brown III. Or, you know, if you're not getting big hit plays on offense, you've got to find ways to win the game outside of that, you know, defense and special teams. But I think it's a cumulative, right? I think you've got to find ways to put together a well-rounded game in all three phases. And right now, Florida hadn't done that. You know, I think BB3 gives you a lot of dynamic in the special teams department. I think you've got a kicker that can, you know, that can do things for you to put points on the board. And I think you do have the skill on offense to put points on the board. They've just got to find a way to execute. And right now, for me, that's the biggest thing in offensive perspective. But I think defense is going to have to come. And that's where I say, you know, the fan base makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I'll say, as an offensive guy, I'll say that, right? One of the best things or the most fun part about a game when I was playing was – getting your adjustments on the offensive side on the bench and getting up and watching the defense play. And when you've got, you know, it makes it a hell of a lot easier when you've got Reggie Nelson and Brandon Spikes and Brandon Seiler and Ray McDonald and all the boys out there doing what they do best. It's fun to watch. And one thing for me that I can't stand, and I haven't seen it as much this year as I have in years past, is just seeing guys sitting on the sideline. Like, you know, when the defense is on the field, when the offense is on the field, and not getting adjustments, I mean just sitting there and the game's going on, right? Like, one of the coolest parts for us, the camaraderie that was, in my years, was watching guys go to work. Because, it makes no sense to go through the off season and do all the things you do and just kind of sit over there like a bump on a log and not really care about what's going on the field. And so for me, it's kind of fun to see guys get juiced up watching their boys go to work and watching guys make plays. That's part of the deal. And so looking forward to seeing that this week. I mean, I've seen it, but you're not seeing a ton of chest bumping and fired up the whole game. You got to find ways to get back to what was.
Yeah, that leads me into two questions I have. You obviously have a much closer look at the program than the average, or even really the average media member. But obviously, the losses keep mounting up for Coach Napier. And so one of the things that he just did an unbelievable job of last year when the losses were mounting up was keeping the team together and making sure that they don't quit. And I think that it would have been very easy for the defense especially to have quit after USF, but they come out on the road against LSU. They give us a chance to win. They come out against Miami where they, I think we were down 4 defensive linemen and they give us a chance to win. What is it about Coach Napier that he just, no matter how many close losses we have, he continues to get these guys to buy in and play hard for him every single week?
Well, I think as a player, he's likable, right? I mean, I think if you're playing for him, he's a guy you can get behind and go play for without a doubt. But I think from a foundational standpoint, right, what he builds in a culture, he's taking a lot of effort into the culture and keeping guys close and tight together. I mean, that's not an easy accomplishment, especially this day in football, right? College football these days, you're building a 1-year culture. That's a tough task for any coach, right? So I think there's that. Not a cop-out, right? Performance is key. I mean, you've got to find ways to win ball games. And at the University of Florida, that's mediocrity is not accepted by a lot, right? And former players, fans alike, alumni alike, I mean, people want to see wins. And that's the tough road he's climbing right now. But, I mean, man, from a coaching standpoint, I can tell you, from being with Mullen and seeing the Mullen years, right, and you saw the early success of those first 2 years, and then you kind of saw the house of cards all crash down. I think the biggest thing with Mullen and the difference is he lost the locker room. Yeah. He lost those players, and everybody kind of pitted the mistakes against each other, and then all of a sudden, everything just kind of fell apart. I think with Napier, you've got a foundation. And the question just becomes is how do you equate that to execution on the field and go on and find some wins? And with that said, I mean, he's got a tough task with the schedule as it is, right? I mean, you're going against the toughest schedule 2 years in a row. I mean, that's not an easy accomplishment for any team, but yeah, that's not necessarily an excuse either, right? In Gainesville, Florida, they don't you want to play the best. That's why you go there, right? You want to play against top 5 opponents, and you want to play against as many as you can. I think for us, when I was playing, that was the one reason I wanted to go to Florida. Now you had LSU, you had Tennessee, you had Georgia, you had Florida State, and then you were going to play the Auburns of the world, all these other Arkansas's. Like, you live for those games, man. Like, if I had it our way, we'd play top 10s every week and be completely happy with that just for the opportunity to go out and prove some people wrong. So I think with this team, they got the ability to go out with a chip on their shoulder, though. There's a lot of football left. You got 8 games left. You're 1-3. Is it where you want to be? No. But you have the potential to go out and, you can run the table. That's not out of the question, by the way. And I don't feel goofy for saying that, right? If you show up with a remnant of the offense we saw last year and the defense plays what they're doing the first, 4 games of the season, it's not out of the question to go win 6 the next 8 at all. Question is, from a player perspective, are you going to look yourself in the mirror, right, and go find a way to put it on you, right? It's so easy to put it on a coach, right? As a player, it's really easy to listen to all the outside noise and say, well, Billy Napier can't call plays and this and that. I don't listen to that. I mean, as a player, you better gut check yourself and say, Like, what are we not doing that we could be doing better? And I can promise you, as somebody who's watched the film this year, everybody in that locker room could do a little bit of soul searching and say, we're not doing as good as we should be doing from an execution standpoint. Like, we can go win games the way it is right now. We've got to go figure that out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't know that Florida would be able to run the table, but I do think that because of how stout the defense is, they're going, you know, it's sort of like what you were saying about having, it's better to have a great defense and no offense than vice versa, because, you know, if the score remains close to zero, then you always have a chance to win, just like we did against LSU in Miami. But it's really interesting just having you on and listening sort of to what you're saying about the players needing to gut check themselves, because I do see a lot of parallels with that 2004 season where Coach Zook got fired. And even though there were, you know, fire on Zook.com and there were all these questions about, they're not quite as bad as there is today because social media wasn't as rampant back then. But from what I remember, you know, the team didn't quit. They still went on and they, you know, upset FSU on Bobby Bowden Field, Ron Zook Field commemoration night. And so hopefully we got some players listening and they're willing to heed your advice. But one last question for you. You talked about the offensive execution and everything like that. Whenever I'm sort of a layman watching the way the tight ends are utilized last year and the year before and then compared to this year, it seems like we got Hayden Hansen much more downfield, at least against LSU and against Ole Miss and against Mississippi State and sort of our better offensive performances last year. But I don't think we've seen a whole lot of that this year. Do you attribute that to just situational, or is it play calling, or why has Hayden Hansen not been utilized this year the way that he was last year?
I think it's probably a mix of things. And if you ask my opinion, I'm probably thinking the fact that you've got a Trey Wilson that's back for the first time in 2 years, right, who's still a fairly young receiver from a game time perspective, right? He, gamer, no doubt, skill guy. I mean, he can fly, he can move, he's got a lot of good things about him. But you got VB3, who's also really young, and raw talent. I think when you get young receivers, it's a little bit different, right? Because when you look back and you've got Chim DK and Ricky Pearsall, it gives you a lot more options of what you're going to do with your tight end, in my opinion. You know, middle of the field opens up a little bit more. I think from watching Hayden, because I look at Hayden very similar to how I was from a receiving tight end perspective, even though we didn't do some of the things that we do with him back then. You know, over routes, like, we run a lot of zone. Right? We run a lot of zone, split zone. There's so many things you can do with that. And we run a lot of 12 personnel, right? So when you look at him and Tony Livingston, I think there's a lot of potential between the two of them. But I would say you've got to come up with every catch that's catchable too, right? And that goes for both of them. That's not just Hayden. I'm just saying Tony's had a couple drops recently, a couple of young player mistakes, you know, should have had a touchdown at LSU and closed the throwing lane. I mean, there's a handful of things, right? But – you know, I think it's just a matter of getting everybody on the same page, and you've got to find ways to beat coverage. And I think when you look at Florida, when I was there, yeah, you couldn't say there was anybody on the two deep who couldn't beat coverage. I mean, you had 06 team, you know, you had Dallas Baker and Bubba Caldwell and Percy Harvin, and then you had Riley Cooper and David Nelson. And I mean, you had so many guys in the depth chart, Lewis Murphy, that good luck trying to cover them in man. Yeah. And in zone coverage, you got four guys on the field at any given time that are going to find the space. And so I think it's a matter of a lot of things. But, you know, I think, one, you got to take what the defense is giving you right now too, right? I mean, there's been plenty of 5 to 10 yard scrap routes for the tight ends that we can get the ball out quick. And we've kind of gone for some deeper shots that weren't necessarily warranted. So, you know, I think and trust that they're probably hammering that home during the bye week, and hopefully come out this weekend and see a little bit different story. And Will, you mentioned 04. The one thing for me, the correlation there, right, when you had Zook leave and Urban came in.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people realize that 04 team was really, really close to being an 11-1 team. Mm-hmm. Right? You lost to Tennessee on a walk-off field goal. Mm-hmm. You lose to LSU at home, really in walk-off fashion in the fourth quarter. And then you lose to a Georgia team that you were beating in the, you know, you're playing well that whole game and just let it fall apart in the second half. Those are three games, especially two of them being rivals, that still bother me. And if you want to include the LSU game as a rival, then it technically started really in 03. That's, I think, what on-ramped the rivalry against LSU. And I think when Urban came in, that was his biggest thing, was we're not going to lose at home. And we're not losing the rivals. And so you turn the page into 05. As players, we had to look ourselves in the mirror and say, like, the talent is in this room. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw a really good turnaround in 05 to a 9-3 year. But you lose that South Carolina game, you had no business losing. We lost the Alabama game, which we absolutely got demolished. Probably one of the worst losses I've ever been a part of for a number of reasons. And, you know, just didn't go our way. But I think going into 06, that is the mindset that changed, right? Urban was always big on core guys. Like, give me 22, 25 guys that are out here right now that can bring this thing into right here. And I think it easier said than done back then, but nowadays in college football, if you're not a guy that's starting right now that's trying to bring that core group together and demand everybody else raise up to that bar, it's going to be a long season. And, you know, like I said, as a player, you've got to look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, what am I doing wrong that needs to be corrected?
Yeah, and I'm not asking you to give away state secrets by any means, but from the outside's perspective, it seems like Miles Graham is that kind of guy, at least for the defense. I don't know that the offense has it, but to me, what I've been saying on the show is that the reason I really still think that there's a path for Florida to get to 6-6 or 7-5 or even better is because Miles Graham is a legacy Gator from Gainesville. He wears the logo on his sleeve. He's just not going to allow the guys to quit, and he seems like that kind of guy. People talk about Lagway with his leadership. I know he's obviously, at least from an outsider's perspective, he looks more quiet than, you know, Tim Tebow, obviously. Yeah. And so I worry that the offense doesn't have that sort of guy with the it factor that can really rein everybody in, make sure everybody's on their assignments so that everyone's on the same page execution wise on game day. But I don't worry about that with like Miles Graham, for example.
And I think it's fair. The one thing I'd say is, like, as a player, you know what you got in the locker room.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as a player, I always knew just from – and you don't win championships in August, right? I mean, they won in January, February, March. I mean, it's won well before, you know, June. So as a player, you know exactly who you can count on. I think for us it was always about not letting your teammates down, right? Like, I think for me, the one thing that scared me the most into making sure I was prepared and I was doing what I was supposed to do was I didn't want to be the one that if it came down to 3rd and 5 and we need a first down to win the game, I didn't want it being on me. And I think everybody in that core group had the same mindset, you know, all the way down to 2D. And so for us, it was like if you played a role, right, and I was a role player, right, I wasn't getting 50 catches a season. Even though I think I probably could have if Urban wanted to, that's a different story.
In Coach Napier's offense, you might have.
100%, but you know what? I accepted that, right? I had to learn how to block. I think when me and Billy Lasko, you know, became really used in the offensive system midway through 05, I think I realized I was going to make my living as a blocking tight end in Urban's offense. And I was fine with that. You know, if I could see the field another 20 times a game just by, you know, the willingness to run, you know, pull action counter as an H-back, I was going to do it. And so I think that you need guys like that. Like, everybody's got their role. And if it's a matter of an unselfish mentality that needs to come back, then, like, you got to find that, right? Yeah. If you're worried about, you know, NIL and all the other stuff, I got bad news for you, man. Like, you're not going to win championships with that mentality. It's just not going to happen. So – I think it's just a matter of why you're on this team right now. Like, what do you want out of the deal? And I've long said it. If you go to the University of Florida for 4 years and walk away with nothing, I mean, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The goal is to bring your kids back and look up and say, hey, that banner right there. Matter of fact, both those banners right there. Like, I had something to do with that. Right. That picture in the concourse that you see, like, dad's right there. Like, that's the kind of stuff that really got us going back in 05, 06, and Urban used to harp on that all the time. And now as a 40-year-old dad, like, that's one of the coolest things that I've got, you know, to go back to. And my kids are huge Gators. I mean, I can spot my son from a mile away in the north end zone with his shirt off, swinging around his head because he wants to be a part of that. And just because at our house, we talk a lot about that.
Yeah.
Man, that's cool. Tate, appreciate you jumping on with us, man. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys having me.
Going back to those times, kind of building off of that, was it in 04 at any point, or was there any kind of memory you have of kind of thinking of all the talent that you guys had collected during that time frame, whether it was a game or a practice where you're like, oh, my gosh, we have a shot. You know, we could do something pretty special.
And when Zook left in 04, there was a lot of conversation around Urban coming in with a, you know, five wide and spread offense. And, you know, as a tight end who played a lot of slot in high school, like, I was kind of excited for it, but there wasn't much to be excited about based on what I was hearing. I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of opportunities to leave, and, you know, I'm glad I didn't for a number of reasons, right? When I got recruited, I was probably one of the few that had a, you know, list of things that I was looking for in a college, had a lot of things that I was evaluating, you know, baseball was in the picture, football, but also like academics, social life, you know, what was it like, what kind of town I was living in. And went to UCLA on a recruiting trip, which was a huge mistake, you know. For a Texas guy, I went out there and was like, no, this is not going to happen. There's no way. Like, I couldn't do that, right? And I always tell people, when I got off the plane in Gainesville, it's almost like I got on the plane in East Texas, flew a circle and landed again, because it felt like a natural at-home feel. I'd say for me, there's a couple moments. Like, there's plenty of funny moments. Some of them I wouldn't out on the air, right? There's obviously the core group of guys that I don't want to put out like that. That's some funny ones though, man. Zook, when Zook was there, I used to love it because, when I come in, he was just trying to get plays for me in the red zone. And like, that's where I felt like I thrived back then. And when Urban came in, it was kind of like, okay, obviously not going to get a ton of, you know, ton of balls. Again, almost every year was like, should I go somewhere else to get the most out of being a receiving tight end, or do I accept kind of what the role is going to be? And, you know, the hard part is, I look around that locker room and I was like, man, I had so many good boys. I had so many brothers that I appreciated as people and loved being around, and the work ethic, man. I mean, like, you could, Mick Marotti and Matt Bayless, I couldn't leave that. And knowing what we had there from a talent perspective, you knew it was going to happen, right? Like, you just had that feeling, the way we worked, the effort that was put into it, everything that Urban was trying to do with the program and change with the mentality, like, for me, it was a no-brainer. And, you know, I think from an unselfish standpoint, it was exactly the decision that needed to be made. From a selfish standpoint, it would have been gone, you know, right after the bowl game, Peach Bowl in 04, if I was truly looking just for me. But I think the University of Florida, a special place in my heart, and all the guys associated, was what kept me around. And honestly, I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can only imagine the memories from back then. Obviously, today, a little bit different perspective, down the sidelines, working with Sean and Jeff, Shane.
You know, Jeff's been around. I mean, hell, Jeff's been around since I was in college. You know, I used to ping him to go play golf over at Ironwood for, you know, around. So it's fun. I'll say that the rivals, it's funny because the Tennessee game in 04 – and when Urban came in, we weren't losing another rival game. It wasn't happening. And so for us, we kind of set out, we're not losing to Tennessee again. Well, we went, I think it was 15 out of 16 years that we went 15 straight or 14 straight and didn't lose to Tennessee. And it almost took the rivalry conversation out of it, right? I mean, that's almost how dominant it was. And so we kind of checkmarked that. Georgia game, besides 07, you know, we had some really good games with Georgia, and it's always a battle. One of the best parts about it was we never lost to Florida State. And so that 04 team, you know, having a part in that and going undefeated against FSU was awesome. And then you add in two basketball national championships that we got to enjoy as students was you know, just the cherry on top.
Man, that's as good as it gets. These days, on the radio, is there any different perspective that you've learned watching the game, being around it through a different lens that maybe you didn't expect before you took that role?
You know, the role came about out of the blue. It was kind of funny, just through, you know, connections with UF, and, you know, somebody reached out and said, hey, your name keeps coming up. You know, would you have interest? I obviously love my day job because that's what pays the bills, but it's probably the most fun gig I've ever had, you know, had a chance to do. One, because Jeff and I have got a great relationship, and that's an easy, you know, pregame show and atmosphere. Sean's been great taking over for Mick. You know, we brought in a guy that's just a absolute pro's pro. And I think having Shane around is amazing because he's a legacy, man. Shane Matthews is one of those guys that is put in a lot of high-level conversations in SEC football. And so it's great having his perspective. I think for me, it's watching the games, and it's very similar to being a player, because like you watch the games and you kind of conceptualize what you're watching the same way you would as a player. And then when you watch the film the following week, it's not as bad. Like, you're not watching it like a fan, right? You kind of know exactly where things are happening and what's keeping you from, you know, efficiency or success, and what's going right. And so you don't kind of get too high, too low. Now, I'll listen to Steve Russell's show going home from every game. Man.
Talk about high and low.
The sky's falling, even if you're winning games, right? And so I think I always take it with that perspective from a player attitude. You know, until I see it, you know, on film, it's I'm not necessarily going to give a harsh opinion or this or that. And I'm an optimist too, right? I mean, you know, you can lose three games, you can still go out and win the next eight. I mean, that's the reality of college football, and it's happened before. It can happen again. I think for us as a team, you got to find ways to lock in tight and really take this on together.
That's great stuff. The radio team, it's the best of the best over there. So,
Tate, going back to you talked about the swap and the impact it can be for opponents. Let's jog your memory a little bit. Favorite stadium you played in outside of Gainesville?
Ooh.
And by the way, Will and I were there in 06 at Jordan-Hare, our only loss of the year. And even though we were, I think, 10 years old, that still sticks out as one of the most incredible environments we've been a part of.
Yeah, Auburn was good. Obviously, take the loss there was not fun. But I also don't know if we win a national title without that loss. So, you know, it kind of got us going.
I mean, the review, that was like the first game they had review, and they totally cheated us on it.
Well, that and the crowd noise they were pumping in.
Yes.
They had like this band down in the
10-year-old, I was very upset that they weren't being penalized for the band playing.
Man, Tennessee dud, you know, because 06 and 08, that place was absolutely quiet by halftime and funneled out by third quarter. LSU was one of those weird ones, because in 05 and 07, you kind of had them beat for 3.5 quarters and you let them off the hook. So you didn't get the full effect of Death Valley. It wasn't loud. We tamed that crowd early and then, you know, had to deal with a loss late in both games. I would say the toughest place we've ever played on the road, in my opinion, was Bama in 05. And that was the Tyrone Prothrow, you know, career ender. Man, that game was loud. I'll give them credit. And they were doing stadium renovations at the time. They didn't even have what they have now. That game was stacked, loud. We got absolutely curb stomped. It wasn't fun to be a part of. But yeah, I'd say that was probably the most fun all around atmosphere. Georgia game. I mean, from a true road game, right? Georgia games, those are always unbelievable.
Quick question on the difference between playing at the at SEC teams versus FSU. Did you guys walk in there and just think that it was like Doak was completely quiet, or it was like
no,
or anything?
No, Doak's a great atmosphere. I mean, I'll give them credit, right? They showed. I think in 04 was the best out of the times we went there, and it was a night. If I'm not mistaken, it was a night game.
It was a night game, yeah.
Or a 3:30 or a night game. I remember that was my first. That was my first Florida State game in 04, and I was on kickoff return. And I remember my dad and my brother came in from Texas, took the drive, you know, no sleep, came over to the game. And I remember sitting back on kickoff return in my drop back, and it was like Reggie McGrew, AJ Nicholson, and one of their other starting linebackers, maybe Buster Davis. It was like one of the three guys I'd have to block depending on how they crossed. Yeah. And I just remember like setting back in my drop and like the whole Osceola and the spear already had your heart pounding. I think I dropped back in my, you know, 10, 15-yard drop, stuck a foot in the ground, turned around and tried and spot my guy and got just absolutely demolished, ejected for like 5 yards back. And I remember my dad telling me after the game, he was like, yeah, that woke you up quick on that first play. And I was like, yeah, it kind of got me going.
Well, Tate, I know you're a busy man, and we appreciate it taking time out of your schedule to join us guys two nights before we take on the Longhorn. So thank you very much, and let the fans know where they can find you on social media and where they can listen to you on Saturdays.
Yeah, man, at TateKC84 on Twitter. You know, on Saturdays, you look up local affiliates, but WRUF, syncmygame.com is great. If you want to listen to the radio broadcast while you're watching the TV and don't want to listen to the national TV crew, so jump on with us. We do 3 hours pregame, postgame, or 3 hours pregame show with me and Jeff, and then leads us right into the broadcast, and then we got postgame show too. So always enjoy people tuning in.
Awesome. Well, last thing, score prediction Saturday. We do this for every guest that comes on.
Whew, I got 2017 Gators out.
There we go. All right.
Love it. Well, thank you very much, Tate. Appreciate it, and go Gators.
All right, appreciate you guys.
Go Gators.
Appreciate you, Tate.
Go Gators.
All right, fellas. Well, that was 2006, 2008 SEC champion and national champion tight end Tate Casey. And that episode was brought to you by Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give a guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, that was good stuff, guys. He gave a lot of cool insight with him being on the sidelines on the Gators radio network inside the locker room every Saturday. Jake, what'd you think?
Man, Tate always has great insight. Great guy, first and foremost. And then he sees it through a unique lens too. You know, I think being a player and then being down on the field, obviously he's been there. He's been in their shoes before. So he's experienced all of that. And then to be down there on the field and kind of have a pulse of what's going on. You know what I mean? Like he said, he's familiar with some of the schemes and stuff. He can see it from down on the sideline. So yeah, I just think Tate always has some really good insight.
I liked how he mentioned, you know, he watches it from a player's perspective, him being down there on the sidelines and doesn't really have those impulse reactions like the four of us do. As we're firing off tweets in the first quarter saying this game's over, this, that, and the other, and we are tracking, you know, flights come Sunday morning.
Hey, the duality of man, we can proclaim we're going to be 12-0 and 0-12 the next day.
Correct.
Hey, we all have a role. You know,
that's right.
He said that. He said we all have our role to play.
Yeah, he was the run blocking guy in the Meyer offense, and we're the guys that's going to say we're turning the season around if we win on Saturday.
Yeah, I thought he offered a fascinating perspective on there. It seems like, you know, obviously that there's tons of questions about Napier's job, and you just, you know, scroll on Twitter, you listen to anything, it's like Florida, everybody is talking about the Florida job being open before the Florida job is open for the second year in a row. But he sort of, you know, I kind of asked him about it and he just instinctively went into almost like a pep talk to the team as if, you know, they need to look in the mirror and figure out what they're going to do. And it kind of take it back to what Billy Latsko was saying against Miami, that just this play, then the next play, then the next play, then the next play. And, you know, if you do that and you're all on the same page and execute, you know, crazy things can't happen. It is college football and they are coming to the swamp. So who knows? I might predict us to go 9-3 after listening to that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what,
it's always fascinating how players have that sort of systematic, like, discipline almost in their emotions that,
yeah,
bad as things seem from the outside, like what Billy talks about during his press conferences about hunkering down and everybody coming together inside the locker room, inside the facility. Out across different generations, across different coaching staffs, those guys have that so like buried into their personality and into their the way that they view life and the way that they view football. It's interesting how that always seems to work out with former football.
It's fine, Devin, in year one, maybe year two, not year four. Yeah. It's 43 games in and we're seeing the same circus. So,
yeah, hey, Tate's a film guy though, and he said there's a lot of execution that needs to go on better. So I believe him.
Yeah, yep. I felt like he was, you know, realistic about that things need to go. They got to play better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Saturday, I think they need something to go right early. Because if it doesn't, I mean, we're going to be sitting there, all of us, up in the stands with that same feeling of here we go. You know what I mean?
And I think paper bags ready, and maybe drive sober, get pulled over, Boo Birds make a reappearance.
We need something to go right offensively, like,
exactly,
you know, a missed tackle or something on a boss screen, because like I think that the defense is going to show up ready to play just like they did against LSU and Miami, and so we'll see. But I mean, I thought Tate was great, one, because of, you know, the different perspective and everything. But two, he didn't cop out and say, you know, we got to give Coach Napier more time. He was like, it's just unacceptable to be this bad. And if you're not, you're going to be employed elsewhere. Mediocre is not acceptable at Florida. I thought it was
his former head coach has publicly stated as well. Urban Meyer, yes, on some of those. So
that's right.
They understand what it takes to win, and they understand we got to beat rivals and win at home. And I don't have Napier's home record in front of us, but we've certainly piled up a lot more losses in the last 3.5 years inside the Swamp than we have probably in the last, I don't know, decade, 9 years. Two coaches combined, I'm not too sure, but it seems like we don't have too many thrillers, too many wins coming out of
the It's almost gotten to the point where it's worse than just talking about home losses. When you're losing at home to direct small schools, it's almost like protecting the Swamp isn't even the question anymore. It's protecting against losing to G4 or G5 teams.
It shows some pride at home.
Right.
Glass half full. I mean, but you guys know the Swamp, man. You make one big play early, and that place is going to be on fire. Like, everything else that's happened this season, you wouldn't even know. The place will come to life.
Yeah.
It's ready to become unglued. You know, that's why we all like to gather here, 90,000 of us, despite what our record is. You know, I've seen that place sold out when we're 4-6, 4-7. And, you know,
there were 85,000 people in the stands whenever Mullen got fired against FSU, and they were 5-6 or whatever. Greg Knox decided he was starting Emory Jones over Anthony Richardson.
Well, and we take pride in the stadium and the atmosphere at UF too. Having Texas make their first experience in the Swamp and their fans that are coming to Gainesville for the first time be to see again a 1-3 Florida team, it's just disappointing. It's a bummer. But like you said, if we can come out and make a play early, get the place buzzing, then you know, hopefully, at least for one Saturday, the Gators look like the Gators and the Swamp feels like the Swamp again.
Quite frankly, first 3-and-out. If we have a 3-and-out the first drive, it's going to be ugly.
There's going to be bluebirds after
that. Hear it,
I will be starting those, by the way.
Well, it's going to struggle.
It goes back to the margin for error-free football. Like, we talk about needing a fast start, which obviously we do, but under this coaching staff, we haven't started seasons ready to play. I can't think of very many times where we've had the most beautifully scripted opening drive and the most beautifully scripted plan. You come out and you're up 7-0. Like, even thinking about, like, those Tennessee teams that we've beaten in the Swamp, or that Tennessee team that we beat in the Swamp under Billy, where, you know, we kind of controlled the game against Joe Milton, get him to throw interceptions. They came out and they scored on, like, 4 plays on their opening drive, and it was 7-0 before you even blinked. So it's starting fast, especially with the way that this team has looked through 4 games, I think is the boo birds will be out if they're not able to start fast.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had a beautiful scripted drive in the bye week of all bye weeks last season before the before the UCF game.
Yep.
Am I correct about that? So, hey, you know, we've been hearing the same exact thing. We tweaked something. We were more competitive. DJ has gotten his best practices since he started practicing.
The best practice,
which is a great way of saying nothing, of course. But I do think Texas is going to struggle. They, if you look back at Sark in these big games, he kind of gets let off the hook a little bit. He hasn't won all that too many big games. He struggled with Oklahoma a couple times when they haven't had as much talent. They whooped him last year, but the year before I think they lost. He went at home against Georgia and kind of got dominated until the refs got involved in DK Royal Stadium. And then when they went obviously into the SEC championship game, they looked like shell of themselves. They almost blew it against Arizona State. You know, they almost came back against Ohio State, but his offense seems to struggle in these big games. Let's just say
at least his offense makes the playoffs, Will.
Luckily for Sark, this is not necessarily a big game because we haven't held up our end of that bargain.
Oh, I disagree. The Swamp is going to be loud and proud, and they are going to be screaming at the Texas Longhorns. And I think that they are going to struggle because the culture at Texas is like, it's literally like, it's like my wine and cheese analogy about, you know, the touchdown terrace. It's like, they just kind of are sitting there watching the game and holding their rings up, and that's sort of all they do. They're not out screaming and everything. And so, you know, call me a conspiracy theorist. I think whenever Texas gets into some of these really raucous environments, they don't know what the intensity level needs to be.
I don't hate that take, because in Austin last year, it's the first SEC road game where I did not have the first fan chirp, didn't have one bad word or bad phrase or anything hurled at me in my direction, in a game where they had plenty of reasons to make fun of Florida fans and to make fun of the University of Florida. So I don't hate that take, that they don't quite get SEC football yet. So
yeah. And I think it kind of goes to their relationship with A&M, where they kind of just ignore A&M and don't have any sort of chance for a little brother. But A&M fits in a little bit better because they do make fun of the other team.
Yeah. Saw the horns off in their fight song where they haven't played the team in 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they cry so hard over horns down, you know?
Yeah. Plenty of those come Saturday. Fellas, last segment, score predictions. Will, as you got the double horns down.
I got the Gators 24-13.
Dev?
Thank you guys for holding it down without me. I had some job and some family stuff to tend to before we got recording today, so I appreciate it. Our Florida Gators, on our show, I will never pick them to lose. Let's go 10-6, the Florida Gators.
You don't want to do the 3-2 Auburn Miss State game?
No. I really have faith after the – I was going to, but I heard about how good of a practice DJ had on Wednesday, and realized that this is a team that you don't hold the Florida Gators to less than double digits in the Swamp. You just don't do it.
Except the McElwain that one year against FSU.
Yeah, 9-0.
Y'all are going to make me look like the bad guy on this show already.
No, I'm joining the Jake, so go ahead and get it out.
Yeah, I'll go. I think it's going to be ugly, man. I think it's going to be ugly. But until I see us move the ball consistently, I just think that fourth quarter is going to be tough on the defense. So kind of ugly, sloppy. I'll go 16-13, Texas.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think there's going to be some opportunities for Texas to take over short fields where they convert those into touchdowns or field goals. I just think it's their defense is too much. I think this is two of the worst third down offenses in the country. So, I mean, it could go either way with some mistakes by either Arch Manning or DJ Lagway. But I'll take the Longhorns 20 and Florida 6.
I don't know if we talked about it when Tate was on, but – of all the defenses that I've watched this entire season, Ohio State might be one of the top two or three that I've been the most impressed with. I think they're really, really good on defense, and obviously their stats kind of bear that out too. But they're a team that passes the eye test on defense, so I think it's going to be a tough day, and I hope that that our play caller and that our offense is ready to get creative and to execute at a high level on Saturday.
Well, thank God the Florida Gators are playing Texas. But
our play caller is locked and loaded, ready to go. Look at him.
DeBilly has had 2 weeks to really dive into that playbook. He almost made it to the fourth page, and I'm sure we'll see some good stuff this weekend. Excited. Well,
this play calling is what got us here, so.
We haven't changed it in 8 years. There's nothing to change. It's what got us here.
Hey, man, we all know the football season doesn't start until you've had your first bye week, all right? So, new season this Saturday.
Well, thank you, guys. If you're still listening, give us a follow on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. I believe our handles are down below. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Give us a share as well on all of your platforms. And we appreciate you for tuning in for another episode of Breakfast Bites. We'll be back Sunday morning following the Gators against the Longhorns. We'll see you Sunday morning. Thank you.
Go Gators.